This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. This week, a new multi-state compact will take effect, allowing Wisconsin nurses to practice in 26 other states, including Iowa. And nurses from those states can practice here in Wisconsin as well. Welcome news for many in the healthcare industry, as a potential shortage of nursing staff continues to be an issue. Joining us today to talk about how the new Enhanced Nurse Licensure Compact will help improve regional healthcare are Beth Smith Housecamp, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Nursing Officer at Gunderson Health System, Jason Fratsky, Chief Nursing Officer at Mayo Clinic Health System in southwestern Wisconsin, and Martha Scheckel, Dean of Viterbo University's College of Nursing, Health, and Human Behavior. So Wisconsin was part of a nursing licensure compact before this one. And so, Beth, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about when the previous compact took effect and how that changed things for nurses.
So Wisconsin, as you indicated, was part of an original compact that I believe began in around 2000. And there were approximately 15 states at that time that joined with a compact. And for the last 15 years, there's been a movement to try and enhance it, i.e. the name Enhanced Compact. But there was a difference of opinion on oversight and governance and activities within each state. So a few years ago, there was a movement to modify some of the premises of the compact, and with that modification, many more states joined.
Mm-hmm. Can you go into a little bit more detail about what some of the concerns were, or some of the issues of debate were?
The original issues of debate were oversight, that individual state boards were concerned about not being able to offer discipline and safety measures that they as a system of the state desired to do. So with this new compact, the states individually still maintain the ability to have disciplinary process where and when appropriate.
Jason, I wonder if this will impact people who already have their licenses under the previous compact. I mean, is there going to be a need for people to be, applying for new licenses?
There's a grandfather clause with the new compact. So everyone who had an established license within Wisconsin automatically is carried over. So the impact on individual nurses in that regard is minimal. And interesting, Wisconsin was a little late to the compact itself. I think we were coming up to a deadline here close to the end of the year, and I can tell you a lot of nurses were very nervous because we have multiple nurses who carry that licensure in Wisconsin, but also are live in Wisconsin or vice versa with Iowa, and we're scrambling or thinking about how they're going to have to apply and get that new license that they had taken for granted before with the compact previously. So impact really was positive in regards to the nurses. Didn't have to do a whole lot since Wisconsin was able to pass the legislation. So,
Jason, can you talk a little bit about what protections are put in place to make sure that everyone is being held to the same standard under this licensing compact?
Well, I think that Beth spoke to it just briefly, is that each of the states continues to have its own board of nursing, and discipline within those boards is really state dependent, but there is a common minimum, if you will, across all of the compact states that there's agreement upon that you would meet these minimum criteria, and whether that's a background check or other things in which really gave each of the states assurance that it was safe for the nurses to go in between and able to move like that. But more importantly, as Beth had mentioned, each state still holds its own ability to discipline a nurse in a way that is appropriate based on their own state laws. Of interest, though, I think of that is when a nurse is disciplined in any of those states. I think it's been a huge benefit now that that whole compact becomes aware of that. So you don't have a nurse necessarily who's able to kind of work through the cracks of the system and maybe jump from state to state as easy in the compact states as perhaps they had prior. So this way, does actually afford a little more safety for our patients as well.
Yeah, Beth, can you talk about, you know, why that aspect of it is important to make sure that that other states in the compact are aware?
I compare it to when patients have opioid addiction. If we don't have a common database to be able to access that kind of information, it impacts care and the delivery model. So this is an opportunity to have the public have enhanced safety to ensure that the caregivers are appropriately trained, appropriately licensed, and have the appropriate oversight to be able to do that no matter where they go.
And so, you know, Jason, I wonder if you could talk about how this nursing compact will impact Mayo. Like, what does this mean for your health system?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think it's an important one to really bring the bear to light is we have, you know, multiple nurses that, you know, live within the state. We have, unfortunately, Minnesota is not part of the compact, but, you know, we have the tri-state area here that nurses certainly from a Mayo system live and work in. But I think some of the key pieces I think that are very important is take a specialty practice as an example, urology or maybe cardiology. And we have physicians who will go to sites and bring a nurse with them. And that main hub may be, let's say, a lacrosse specialist who will go to a Waukon, Iowa, or to other areas. And that nurse may have been an RN and licensed in Wisconsin historically, but with the previous compact, they could do this, but this just shows the examples why this is so beneficial. Now, that nurse can go right along with that physician down to Waukon as that specialty urology practice, and you're not required to have all of that expertise at every site. So it reduces, you know, the need for nurses at those sites. It reduces the complexity of having to understand and know all of those things for nurses at those outlying sites. And it really brings the expertise to the patients, and those nurses coming with them is very important. So we're able to travel across those state lines that the compact allows. So another example I give quickly is that we have a practice, a clinic in Waukon in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. And those staff there, nurses, are able to flex and float between those because their license allows that. If we didn't have that, they'd have to have two licenses. Either we'd have to pay for that or the nurses themselves would have to do that. So it really gives us a degree of flexibility to meet the needs of our patients locally, which I think is really important.
I wonder if this makes hiring easier, too, if hiring people from out of state or hiring Wisconsin nurses to work at, you know, your Iowa locations, if that makes it more simple.
Well, I think for the nurse it does. I mean, if they're coming from a compact state, they don't have to go through the some of that bureaucracy around getting your licensure through the state. I just took this position recently and from Minnesota, Wisconsin, I had to go through that process. And it's not an easy process necessarily. I think it's easier in Wisconsin than it was in Minnesota, but I think it's good that I can just pick up now and come here as a nurse and work right away. I have to maintain my licensure in whatever state, you know, I live in or I came from. And I could switch that affiliation in time if my primary residence becomes Wisconsin. But it does afford an ease for nurses to be able to move between those compact states for sure.
Martha, could you explain, I heard you kind of mention it and Jason just mentioned it, that you have to maintain licensure in the state that you live in. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And so in the example that I gave previously, I maintained licensure in Wisconsin but could work in Iowa. And so I wasn't keeping up with both sets of regulations in both states. Rather, I was keeping up with the regulations for licensure in Wisconsin, and Iowa accepted that. And so I lived in Platteville, Wisconsin, and so it was very easy for me to go across the river. I worked in Iowa, in Dubuque, and then if I also wanted to do any kind of work as a registered nurse in Wisconsin, I didn't have to worry about that dual licensure.
Beth, from Gunnarsson's perspective, how is this compact impacting your healthcare system? I imagine maybe some similar ways.
as Jason articulated, it allows systems when they either have an unexpected increase of patients and or issues where staff might be out for a leave or something to much more quickly have staff fill those positions. Absolutely, it helps what I would say broaden the pool to get competent people.
Have you had an example of a time where you had one of those instances pop up?
This last year, Gunderson has experienced quite a significant increase in their census in the hospital. And in that time, as we trained additional staff, we did have what we call travelers. Travelers are competent people who are temporary employees of the institution to meet a gap until more staff come. And if this were in place at that time that we hired them, we could have decreased the time to investigate and obtain a second licensure. So it would have helped us when we were dealing with that increased census.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about how a new compact will create a multi-state license for nurses in Wisconsin and Iowa. We're here with Beth Smith Housecamp from Gunderson Health System, Jason Fratsky from Mayo Clinic Health System, and Martha Scheckel from Viterbo College of Nursing. Beth, I wonder if Gunderson also utilizes telemedicine. I know that that's a tool that's been talked about as part of this compact, allowing nurses to use telemedicine tools. I wonder if Gunderson takes advantage of that.
Absolutely. We, in multiple states, and this also helps because at times we have established clients going to be a snowbird, and so with licensure it allows us to care for people that have gone to other states that are not generally contiguous to the Tri-County.
Jason, does Mayo use telemedicine at all?
Certainly, it's a big part of, I think, you know, Mayo Clinic and certainly the future of medicine. And, you know, an interesting piece of this is certainly with the scope of Mayo Clinic as a whole, we have, you know, other sites in Arizona and Florida, and both of those are compact states as well. So it does give us the ability, and Beth's right about those snowbirds. We certainly get a lot of those coming and going. And so they're either through telemedicine, as an example, you could treat that patient either site, whether it's Florida, Arizona, Wisconsin, Iowa, through those programs without having any issues relative to the nurse's license, which really allows us as a healthcare industry to really open up the gates and provide care where patients need it, when they need it, and how they need it, versus being really confined by, you know, regulations that, you know, they made good sense 100 years ago, but as technology and process and our systems continue to grow, this is a great example where the licensure compact has really started to evolve in that same way and is really starting to for us to be able to utilize, you know, the resources we have more efficiently across the country. So, and that's good for all of our patients for sure.
And it offers continuity of care so that those snowbirds have established providers and practices that people can use telemedicine to be able to care without interruption.
Martha, I wonder how this compact will impact Viterbo's College of Nursing. You know, whether that's the students or maybe the faculty who teach there.
Well, I think that for us, particularly when we hire faculty, if we're hiring faculty, for instance, from Wisconsin, again, the licensure piece, that there's, you don't have to have that dual licensure. For students graduating, if they go to a compact state, then that means that they will seek licensure in one state and be part of the compact, which is a significant benefit for our new graduates.
How do recent graduates usually become licensed? I mean, is it pretty typical for every graduate of Viterbo to get a Wisconsin nursing license?
It depends where they go. So if they apply for a position in Wisconsin, they have to pass the state board exam, as they do in every state. And then they can apply for licensure in that state. If they decide, for instance, to go to Colorado, they may choose to take their state board exam in Colorado and get licensed in Colorado. And so this new compact will facilitate licensure as well, depending on the state where the student wants to go practice, and make it less cumbersome for them to take their state board of nursing exam and get licensure.
I wonder if you're hoping this compact either maybe attracts people to stay in Wisconsin or seek their nursing license in Wisconsin, or I don't know what your thoughts are on attracting people in other compact states to Wisconsin.
Well, I just think it makes it easier. I think nurses make decisions on where they want to work for a variety of reasons. Some of our new grads might be a little more enticed maybe to go to another state since it's easier. I'm not sure that would have a significant impact on their choice, however, on where they want to work after graduation. Some set their sights to stay local. Some set their sights to go to North Carolina, for instance, and then come back. So I'm not sure that it would be a huge incentive. I think it's just breaking down a lot of barriers and bureaucracy that we don't have to participate in anymore. I think it's a more united approach to acquiring and maintaining licensure.
As has been mentioned, you know, Iowa is part of this compact, but Minnesota is not. And, you know, Jason, just as Mayo Clinic being their headquarters being in Rochester, I mean, I wonder if there's some disappointment there that Minnesota has not signed on to this compact.
Well, certainly. I think, you know, the benefits that we've all shared here, I think, are equally as beneficial in Minnesota as they are in any other state. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons there. I think Mayo Clinic has played, you know, a key role in trying to continue to lobby for the compact in the state of Minnesota. There's many reasons, you know, that that's continued to be a discussion and topic that yet is resolved. So, yeah, for sure, from a Mayo standpoint, the compact would be very beneficial for our nurses, and I think more importantly, that benefit is really then shared by all the patients that we serve in the area. But we'll continue to work real hard with all our representatives to see if we can't continue to make a way in making sure that this may come to fruition sometime in the future for Minnesota. I think, you know, we've got a lot of data to show in the other compact states that, you know, it does go well with some of the changes that we've had relative that we've talked about already around discipline and other regulatory things related to the state boards. I think more and more we'll see states, you know, kind of watch and see how it goes and hopefully continue to join that compact over time. And I hope Minnesota will be one of those.
Gunderson also has locations in Minnesota. And Beth, I wonder, you know, is your health system hopeful that you're, you know, we're going to see Minnesota maybe sign on?
We sure can be hopeful. However, in the interim, what we will do with those individuals who practice is similar. They will just have to have dual licensure until that happens.
Have you heard why Minnesota is not considered joining the compact?
Minnesota, you know, it does have a strong nursing union within the state. And I think a lot of the opposition to the compact has been lobbied against, particularly from the Minnesota Nurses Association. And, you know, they you know, certainly can provide and would give the rationale for, you know, the reasons that they feel strongly that this may in some ways impede their ability as a union in order to fully represent its members. And so I think that's the position they're really trying to come from is, you know, what's the impact to the individual nurses? What are the consequences of the compact as it relates to union activities or labor disputes and those types of things? So I think as you look at it through their lens, they certainly have a different way of looking at the situation than I do, particularly, all the staff here in our region are non-union, and so it takes away that sort of conversation. And for that reason, it's I think, a little more simple in Wisconsin for Beth and I to really take advantage of that.
Can you talk a little bit more, you know, it's been kind of described as a little bit of bureaucracy, a little bit of, you know, jumping through hoops. I wonder if you can describe what that process is like to have dual licensure.
When one applies to any state, because of the magnitude of time and checks that need to happen to ensure that people are competent, they've met the education requirements, it does take time for states to validate that. And even with technology, the process to ensure that a professional is who they say they are, they've been trained, it just takes time. So this allows what we call a primary source verification in one state to translate to another state. So that will be definitely a time saver.
That's Beth Smith Housecamp, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Nursing Officer at Gunderson Health System, here with us today to talk about the regional impacts of a new multi-state licensing agreement. Also joining us are Jason Fratsky from Mayo Clinic Health System and Martha Scheckel from Viterbo College of Nursing. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. You know, when this issue was being talked about in the legislature, you know, I heard it, the compact described as a modernization of Wisconsin's nursing laws. And Jason, I think you also started to talk about this issue as well of, you know, kind of bringing nursing and licensing laws up to speed with what technology we have. You know, I wonder if you could talk more about, you know, what you anticipate that future looking like for nursing laws.
First and foremost, I'm not a lawmaker. I'm a nurse, but you know, and I think it's an important piece to, from my perspective, the technology piece of this is relative to the way that we care for patients, and I think that is typical. The technology really outstretches where we are from, whether it's local laws or state laws or other things, whether it's healthcare or there's other sort of facets of our everyday life, we typically are always catching up to the technology. And I think we talked about it already, but some of the technology around the way that we can, with surveillance of patients, it's going to be really important that we have the ability to do that. Take an example, we have stroke programs. We have many critical access hospitals across the country, and we don't always have those specialists at the immediate fingertips of a patient when they come in distress. And so a patient may be incurring a stroke or some other disability that they need immediate attention with. Technology is in place so that a specialist can be there, maybe not physically, but they can be there in a way that is going to certainly aid and treat that patient in a very timely and critical way that they can get that care and treatment and then be transferred. Now, if we didn't have some of these, whether it's a nurse and even, you know, we share these sort of same processes around licensure with providers as well, it really lends our ability to be able to extend our arms to those areas that are most in need of healthcare, and that's in many of our rural areas. So from a technology perspective, we're pushing that envelope, but the laws and some of our regulations didn't necessarily match that yet. And I think this is, as I mentioned before, a step forward in that, you know, we understand that it's important to be able to get to the patients as quickly and as efficiently as possible. It saves lives. And this, in its own way, allows us to do that in a better and more efficient way. How that will continue to evolve in terms of laws and those kind of things, I think that's yet to be determined, but I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to continue to look at, you know, ways that we can best provide care to patients every day. So,
Martha, do you anticipate a future where, you know, maybe nursing licenses are similar to driving licenses and that they're, you know, they're recognized in whatever state you're operating in?
I would say with the enhanced licensure compact, that's a definite possibility. This is a huge step in the right direction from my perspective. And so with the number of states involved, I would expect to see that trend continue.
Beth, are there any downsides to moving towards this model that you can foresee?
The only downside I would see is not from a professional, but it is potentially possible that certain states will lose some revenue. That if a nurse would choose not to live in that primary state for working, but that's hypothetical at this point, but that was one of the potential downsides that was discussed. When you weigh both of those, both the potential and the reality, I think there is strong conviction that the positives far outweigh the potential revenue differences.
You know, we saw that the Interstate Medical License Compact recently came into effect as well. Wisconsin has signed on to that. Minnesota has actually signed on to that. That's for medical doctors. Beth, are you anticipating that maybe we'll see other healthcare licenses also maybe move towards this model?
I think with many other ancillary or allied health have contacted me and said, when is it coming? So I would anticipate other professionals to follow suit.
Jason, what would that mean for the broader healthcare system, do you think, if we're seeing more of this, similar trends to what we're seeing in nursing?
Well, I think it's a microcosm. Nursing's a microcosm of that question in the sense that if you can now expand that to other disciplines within each of the states that require a licensure, then you've all done essentially the same thing, and that's allowed them to have freedom to be able to move where the needs of the patients are, not based on your license, but based on really where the care is best met. I think there's some work obviously to go through there, but the ground's really been set. Beth may have a better sense of this, but I wouldn't anticipate in the states that have gone this direction, both from a physician and a nurse perspective, that there would be a lot of opposition to that in other disciplines, unless there was something that, specific to that discipline that had to be ironed out. I'm sure they could figure that out. So I think it's a matter of whether or not those areas really want to continue to pursue within the state, come together. It is quite a undertaking, and it's been in the works for many, many years. So if you got the fortitude to move, I think it'll come more and more that direction. There's no question in my mind.
Martha, is there a field that you expect maybe to follow suit next, or another field that is in the process of looking at this, do you know of?
I don't know, but as Beth was talking, I do wonder about some of the other allied health professions, like our occupational therapy folks, our PT, our physical therapy.
Pharmacy.
Yeah, I there's just a lot of other disciplines that we hope would follow suit for the very same reasons that we've seen in nursing.
Martha Shekel, Dean of Viterbo University's College of Nursing, Health, and Human Behavior, is here with us today to talk about a new multi-state agreement that will allow Wisconsin nurses to practice in 26 other states, including Iowa. Also joining us are Beth Smith Housecamp from Gunderson Health System and Jason Fratsky from Mayo Clinic Health System. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the current workforce of nurses in the region and expected trends in coming years. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about changes and trends for nurses in the region. Last month, Governor Scott Walker signed legislation to join Wisconsin in a multi-state nurse licensure compact. The agreement allows Wisconsin nurses to practice in 26 other states, including Iowa, and allows nurses from those states to practice in Wisconsin. Joining us to talk about how this new compact will help address regional shortages of nurses are Beth Smith-Housecamp, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Nursing Officer at Gunderson Health System, Jason Fratsky, Chief Nursing Officer at Mayo Clinic Health System in southwestern Wisconsin region, and Martha Scheckel, Dean of Viterbo University's College of Nursing, Health, and Human Behavior. You know, I want to talk about this issue of a shortage of nurses in Wisconsin, and I imagine that Wisconsin's not alone in this. But, you know, Martha, I wonder if you could start the conversation by talking about, you know, what is the current workforce situation for nurses in our state?
In the U.S., we can expect between 2014 and 2024 to be about 500,000 in need of nurses. There is, in addition to that, a projected more than 1 million RNs that will be retiring in the next 10 to 15 years. So that's pretty significant. That being said, what we also know through the Health Resources and Service Administration is that supply and demand is going to be a bit mixed. For instance, in the Midwest, the only state that's been recently reported that will experience a shortage is South Dakota, whereas there are other states outside the Midwest that will experience a shortage, including California, Texas, New Jersey, South Carolina, Georgia, and Alaska. Supply and demand should stay adequate during that time period, but there are circumstances and factors that can't always be predicted, but it's something that we're always monitoring.
So right now, there isn't necessarily a shortage of nurses in our state.
Based on what I know about supply and demand in our state, that we are holding steady. Beth and Jason might be able to comment in their institutions what they're experiencing.
Yeah, Beth, I mean, has Gunderson experienced any issues of, you know, filling nursing positions?
We've been actually very blessed to be able to have competent, great people to fill our positions. We've recently, in the last 2 years, as I indicated prior, is our census within our hospital has grown quite a bit. And so the hiring we've had to do was to be able to address that increased need. Through some of the data that Martha talked about is the Wisconsin Hospital Association indicates the Wisconsin vacancy of nurses is about 6.2% overall the state. That means some areas might have a little higher, some areas have lower because that's the law of averages. And our vacancy rate is significantly less than that. So we feel really blessed to be able to have the group of nurses caring for our patients.
Jason, what has Mayo been experiencing as far as, you know, having nursing positions open or needing to fill positions?
Yeah, we've been fortunate as well to be able to really hire to the needs that we have. And you know, it's a fairly competitive market for some of those positions. And I think that's, you know, this region, the Midwest is a very strong area with a lot of really good nurses. And so, and you know, I think relatively speaking, we do a good job of compensating those nurses as well. From that perspective and the environments we create for them to work in, I think we've had success in maintaining, recruiting, and being able to hire nurses into our needs. But, you know, as Martha mentioned, those things can sometimes flip without a lot of understanding or a lot of advanced warning. So we always want to make sure we're ready to do that. But from a Mayo perspective, today we're doing okay relative to our recruitment and retention of nurses.
You bring up retention, and I think that's a really interesting part of this. You know, I wonder if that has become more of a challenge, or maybe something that health systems are thinking more about retaining the nursing staff that they already have.
There's no question. I mean, you don't have to hire a new nurse if you don't lose the nurses. Now, of course, you know, individuals are allowed to retire, they're allowed to move with their spouses, all of those sort of things. And, you know, certainly from time to time, somebody may move here from the outside and not, you know, like the area or the particular weather or whatever it might be. So we do have those needs, but I think point is well taken. If we can retain the nurses we have, the need for us to replace them is much smaller. And so, you know, in general, our retention rate is really high at Mayo Clinic. And, you know, that's a testament to the environment that there is, as well as the nurses and the environment that they create with each other. And so, and they provide outstanding care. And so I think they're given the tools they need generally to care for patients. And that really goes a long way. And you treat them well. I mean, it's important. They're an incredible part of the care of the patients. They spend, you know, waking in the hospital 24/7 with them. They're often the big point of contact in our ambulatory settings as well. So it's a key resource for us in terms of patient care.
Yeah, Beth, I wonder what, you know, what Gunderson's experience with retention has been. Is this, you know, do you feel like this has become a bigger issue as well?
I think, as Jason said, it is something that is on every system's mind, is how to maintain awesome clinicians to intersect with patients. And I don't think anyone can take them for granted at all. Our turnover, we call it turnover, is very, very low compared to the state and national. And when we look at our numbers, the vast majority leave because A, they're retiring, or B, they're going on for additional training, like to be a nurse anesthetist, to be a nurse practitioner, which allows them to re-enter the system in a different job, but does require nursing. So we feel very incredibly blessed that our turnover is so low. What we're experiencing that many systems and the research said is nursing personnel used to what we call have one or two practice locations in their career. They would start in a med-surg area and hypothetically choose to say, I want to care for critical patients or I want to deliver babies. And that's where they would work their career. What we're experiencing is that people work what I call a season in many, many more practice locations. And that is something most systems are experiencing, people choosing different practice locations within a particular system.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about trends in the nursing workforce in the region in light of a new compact that will create a multi-state license for nurses in Wisconsin. We're here with Beth Smith-Housecamp from Gunderson Health System, Jason Fratsky from Mayo Clinic Health System, and Martha Scheckel from the Viterbo School of Nursing. You know, we're hearing Jason and Beth's perspectives, Gunderson and Mayo, but, you know, Martha, I wonder if the situation maybe looks different for smaller systems and maybe more local hospitals. What have you heard as far as their ability to recruit and retain nursing staff?
Well, I think that because Gunderson Health System and Mayo Health System cover a broad range, I think you're talking about the rural areas. And so I can speak from an education perspective on the initiatives that we're taking to supply nurses to those rural facilities, and one of them is a significant initiative that we were recently awarded a $1.64 million grant through the Health Resources and Services Administration. 30 entities across the U.S. received that grant, and our particular grant is called Nurses, so it's Nursing for Underserved Rural Students Seeking Educational Success. And the idea is to bring students into Viterbo University, educate them as nurses to go out and serve in their rural communities. It's pretty well known that nurses from rural areas come and get an education and go back and serve their rural communities. And there's also been research linked to creating better patient outcomes, better patient health, if you've got the local well-known nurse providing care in those areas. The way in which we're doing that is to foster the education of students for rural health.
Yeah, Beth, as Martha mentioned, you know, Gunderson has locations in rural areas and around the region. Is it different in those locations than it is at the main hospital here in La Crosse?
When I travel to the rural locations, something that always strikes me is I call them Jack and Jills of all trade. In a higher acuity, specialized tertiary center, you generally have a particular area of practice. When you go to the rural communities, they are incredibly competent in many things. And I think people don't understand they really have to have a skill set that crosses a broad continuum of patients more than in a tertiary center.
Beth, you mentioned earlier that we're seeing more nursing staff go back to school maybe and get a more advanced degree. And I wonder, Jason, what your thoughts are on, you know, how this is impacting the, nursing staff across different levels. Are we seeing more people going for advanced degrees and advanced positions? And, you know, is that putting pressure on finding people to fill those entry-level nursing jobs?
Well, I think it depends on your perspective. And certainly, and the beauty of nursing is that you have so many possibilities. And you can start as an LPN and get your associate's degree as an RN, your BSN, your master's, your DMP, your PhD. And within those spheres of education, there are multiple tracks in which you can take. And so I certainly would not tell any nurse not to do that. I think it's very important that they continue to challenge themselves and feel like they have those opportunities and can take full advantage of them. Because quite honestly, I mean, we're many of those nurses, as they go back, whether it be, you know, for the CRNA, whether they go back as a nurse practitioner or other pieces, they're filling voids that we have in other facets of our healthcare group. And particularly in some of our rural areas, these nurses now are out there providing care. And at times, there may not be a physician present every time that we have those things occurring. So I think some nurses are very, very content and are awesome at being that med-surg nurse for their entire career. And our patients benefit greatly from that. And then we have those nurses that do see, you know what, here are my goals, and that progression through my career is meaningful over a number of years. And so I think there's a lot of room to, and there's lots of opportunities to really take that all on. And I don't think at this point there's any negative consequences from nurses continuing to get their education. Actually, it's the converse. It's a real great thing to see nurses doing.
Beth, I see you shaking your head that it's a positive thing. Do you want to elaborate on your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I concur with what Jason said, and we find many of those nurses who have chosen advanced degrees come back into our system. And they know the system, they understand the culture, and it is a wonderful benefit to have those individuals just in different roles.
Martha, you mentioned that Viterbo, has this new grant, and you're working to recruit people into the profession of nursing. I wonder how that maybe has changed over the years. I mean, has nursing been a profession that needed recruitment in the past, or what is the interest like?
Very high, I would say. We aren't turning students away into our undergraduate program because we've increased our enrollment, but some schools are, and so it ebbed and flow over my 30-year career in nursing, from having a surplus to, needing to recruit. We don't have to spend a lot of time recruiting nursing students because many, many high school graduates, for instance, want to become nurses, and that's very exciting that we don't have to do that. What we have to be able to do is manage the number of students that want to become nurses, not only in our institution, but in other nursing programs in the region and throughout the country.
Well, you mentioned earlier that, you know, the situation, it looks different in Wisconsin and the Midwest than it does on some of the coasts. And, you know, I wonder if you could elaborate on maybe what factors is leading to, you know, Wisconsin to have more of a steady supply and demand. Or I don't know if, Beth, if you have thoughts on that as well.
I don't know if there's one particular reason, but Wisconsin and Minnesota have a plethora of incredibly strong healthcare systems. And I think when there are strong healthcare systems that value nursing, value the contribution of nursing, that makes the environment a place that attracts excellent professionals. So besides that, I'm not sure if there's anything that comes to mind. I think it's this or that, but I think there's great systems.
Yeah, Jason, I don't know if you have other thoughts on, you know, maybe why we're seeing a steady supply of, you know, supply and demand of nurses in the Midwest, and why maybe there are going to be shortages potentially on some of the coasts.
Well, you know, I think that's multifactorial. I think, you know, first and foremost, I think as a region, the systems do provide a great opportunity for nurses to really be a professional nurse and take on all the responsibilities that come with it. And we create environments, and we talked about retention. I think that nurses really gravitate towards, and I think that's partly why you'll see we're not struggling right now with some of the issues that others may be around recruitment and retention. The other piece is, you know, cost of living here is very reasonable. And, you know, I buy a reasonable house here for $250,000. That same house in the coast may be well over $1 million to $2 million. So I think it doesn't take a lot of, if you want to have a family, you want to have a little space to grow that family and other things. I mean, those all factor into how you make choices about where you work. You know, that's it's not an exit interview question that we get a response to, but I think, you know, logically speaking, I think that's certainly to our benefit in the Midwest in terms of our recruitment and retention of nurses.
Martha, how do you think nursing education has changed over the last few years to kind of meet some of the growing demands on nursing staff?
As far as nursing education responding to the increased interest in entering nursing education, I think that nursing programs and the clinical partners are working collaboratively together to increase capacity. For instance, we have not only at Viterbo University, but other programs, Wisconsin Technical College, Winona State University, we've increased our enrollments. And coupled with that, we work with the health care institutions to ensure that we have clinical placement for those students. We have something called the Clinical Coordination Partnership, and that's a systematic way of working together with all of the schools and the clinical partners to place students so that they get their clinical experiences, accommodating a greater number of students, but also graduating a greater number of students to get a greater number of students in the pipeline, nurses out working and I think that also helps to address not having the shortage issues, is the efforts that we're taking in the educational institutions as well as the healthcare facilities to partner in a very strategic and strong manner to provide the educational resources that students need to become registered nurses.
Yeah, Jason, from Mayo's perspective, I mean, how is that beneficial to have that relationship with, you know, schools like Viterbo?
Oh, it's invaluable. I think without question, we have worked very hard to create relationships with schools like Viterbo, because we understand, and I know that the schools and understand this as well, is that partnership is key in the way that we are able to really move forward partnering to educate nurses, and really from our perspective, any way that we can help do that and assist the schools in whether it's clinicals and other facets that are requirements for that nurse to grow and be able to graduate. We want to do that because it benefits us. those nurses have great experiences in our institutions as they go through their experience as nurses. We're very hopeful that they will consider that they'll have that opportunity at graduation to join as well. And overall, I think selfishly that's one part of it, but I think more broadly, we want to make sure that students are successful. And if we can be part of that and they can go out into their communities, whether that be in this region or others, as we help, you know, whatever piece of the pie we have in helping groom those nurses, we're very proud of that and very proud of the fact that they're going out and obviously caring for patients.
We've been talking with Jason Fratsky, Chief Nursing Officer at Mayo Clinic Health System in Southwestern Wisconsin region. Martha Scheckel, Dean of Viterbo University's College of Nursing, Health and Human Behavior. And Beth Smith Housecamp, Chief Nursing Officer and Chief Operating Officer at Gunderson Health System. About regional workforce for nurses and the new multi-state nurse licensure compact that could help address potential shortages. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers.